Welcome back in, everybody, to the CC Podcast. It is the morning of Thursday, January 4th, 2024. Happy New Year to everybody. Hope your holiday was fantastic. Hope you're successfully back into the work, school grind, whatever it may be. Mike Rutherford here in Louisville, Kentucky. Dan Snard up in Columbus, Ohio. Dan, how was the holiday season for the Snards?
Holiday season was good. You know, kids, my oldest is kind of, he's getting tough to tell, like, if he, you know, really loves the gift or not. Like, when he comes downstairs, he's super excited. Like, you have a video of him. He looks like Buddy the Elf when he opens up the gifts. But, like, he always makes, like, backhanded, like, compliments about each gift. He'll be like, oh, man, like, that's almost as good as Bobby's down the street. And we're like, what? So, anyways, no, it was good. Pretty uneventful. Spent some nice time with my family. I actually got back to Louisville for a day. So it was good. How about the Rutherfords?
It was good. It was solid. I felt like everybody was a little bit sick for the entire time, which has kind of become the norm. But this was the first bike Christmas. Virginia wanted a princess bike and with training wheels, and she got it. She's riding it up and down the street now. She's the master. John got a balance bike, one of those things that didn't exist when we were growing up, but he won't even touch it. He like tilted a little bit the first time he grabbed it, and now he wants no part of it. But we had a good Christmas, very relaxing, did nothing really for New Year's. I had Mary's birthday yesterday. She's got the worst birthday of all time, like right after New Year's, right when people are going back to work and going back after the holidays and don't want to do anything. So, but she's a trooper, so she handled it. But we are here. It's that time of the year where you're turning the page. You're putting the holidays behind you. You're getting back into the grind. You're staring back into the endless void of the 2 to 3 months ahead, where it's dark and dreary and cold. And it's in most years, basketball has kind of carried us through these months. That won't be the case now. I feel like we were sort of ignoring basketball during the holidays. It was like how you used to treat school during Christmas break, where you're like, hey, as long as it's not tomorrow, I don't have to think about it. I'm not worrying about it. And now here we are. We're staring it directly in the face. But, you know, we're here. We've got 3 months to talk about this, and then we'll see what happens next. We got a lot to recap from the last couple of weeks. Football season has come to an end. The 2023 calendar year has come to an end. Basketball has continued on per usual. No gigantic coaching change, nothing like that. So we'll talk about all this stuff, then we'll take some questions from you guys that you all served up on Twitter. First of all, I thought we'd do like a little 2023 recap. Sort of an odd year for Louisville sports. You had football bringing in Jeff Brohm, having a lot of excitement. You have men's basketball kind of hitting a modern low. You had some good sports, like women's basketball going to the Elite Eight was great, but that's kind of, it's sort of become the standard at this point. Baseball had a really down year, not even making the ACC tournament. Dan, if you had to, I guess if you had to highlight one moment from 2023 that defined your U of L sports fandom, what was the high point?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, obviously the Notre Dame game, I think a lot of people are going to circle that one. I think the women's volleyball final, even though that was
2022,
I'm losing my mind here. I mean, they did make a run this year, but, you know. Yeah, I mean, I think it was just kind of a, when basketball isn't humming, when men's basketball, excuse me, isn't humming, everything else just kind of is like, eh. I mean, especially, you know, baseball not kind of living up to their standard. So I'm hoping, I know basketball is off to a rough start this year, men's basketball. I'm hoping that we can kind of bounce back in some sports and maybe take that next step in another. But if you ask me for my personal highlight, it would be the Notre Dame game.
I think it has to be the Notre Dame game. I had the same thing. I mean, you could say like the first 10 games of the football season overall, but Notre Dame was the high point. It was a big time event. Biggest crowd in the history of the stadium at that point, you know, storming the field, beating a top 10 team, just having Notre Dame in your house again, is always a cool thing. So yeah, I mean, I feel like it had to be something football related, unless you wanted to say, you know, going back to the Elite Eight with the women's team, but I think football was probably the good pick. Speaking of football, they end the – I mean, bowl season is so weird now. The bowls are this sort of strange combination of being an afterthought for the current season and kicking off the next season. And, you know, outside of the playoff and even the New Year's Six games don't seem to matter the way that they did a few years ago. Louisville loses to USC 42-28. They end the season on a three-game losing streak. They're still, I mean, we'll find out in a few days. I think they'll still end the season with a national ranking. It still is a 10-win season. It still was a year where they played in the conference championship game. There still was a lot to be proud of, but I think that it's tough to get the sting of losing those last three games, especially the one to your arch rival, out of your mouth. So my question is, if we're doing overall grades for this season, for Jeff Brohm's first year, what are you going with?
Yeah, I saw whatever on three they had their grades, and like I actually agree with Jeff's grade. I just don't agree with a lot of the other coaches that they put. Like they put like Dion as a B and Jeff Brohm as a B plus. It's like, all right, well they shouldn't even really be close. I think B plus is applicable for Jeff. I mean, obviously we got off to the start that we did, but it seemed like it was an A the whole semester, and then you have those last three games. I think it's got to bring it down a letter grade. So all in all, I do think the program is headed in the right direction. It was a successful year one, but we do have kind of a bad taste in our mouth going into year two.
Yeah, I went – like my initial reaction is the same as everybody else's, I think, and to say B+. Like I put it up to a poll question – before the radio show last week. And I think B plus B was like the runaway winner for the answer. A minus A was the second choice. I do wonder if, because B plus is what I'm going with, but I do wonder if I'm being overly harsh, if it's just sort of like a recency bias thing, because like if you had told me going into the season that we were going to win 10 games, I would have been like, that's an A minus season. I don't care what the combination of wins is. 10 games this year where we're picked eighth in the ACC preseason, first year with Jeff Brohm, all the sort of roster put together for the transfer portal, 10 wins is an A minus at the very least. And I kind of wonder too, if the results had been inverted, like if we had started 1-3 or you know, lost three out of four games to start the year and then went on a big winning streak at the end of the season and beaten UK, if everybody would be saying this is an A minus type team, A season. But it's not. It unfortunately ended with three losses to three, you know, okay teams. Florida State's a great team. Kentucky was a good team, not a great team. USC, good team, not a great team, and playing with their JV roster. And that's kind of unfortunately, that will be part of the legacy of this season. Is it started off so great. The Notre Dame game was incredible. We made the conference championship game, but they didn't stick the landing. Yeah, and I don't know if you're like me, because everybody's asking, you know, what changed? What happened? What went wrong? Like, I don't think that anything really changed towards the end of the year. Like the analytics, the FPI rankings, the S&P rankings, all these computer rankings that are predictive metrics, they all had us throughout the year as sort of like more of the 30th to 35th best team in college football, as opposed to our national ranking, which was in that, you know, 15 to 20 range. And I think at the end of the day, we just were probably more closer to being like the 30th best team in college football than we were to the 15th best team in college football. We won a bunch of close games at the beginning of the year, and you know we lost some close games at the end of the season. I mean, I think having the Jamari Thrash injury changed the offense, the Jawar Jordan injury changed the offense. But at the end of the day, I think that we were just like a team that couldn't that ended up not being able to find ways to win in those last three games when that was something we did so effectively the first 10 games of the year.
Yeah, I think for me, kind of the way we looked at the end of the year too is what sticks out in my mind. And like, I mean, you mentioned the Jamari Thrash and Jawar Jordan injuries, and obviously those were big, but God, those last three games, and I know we played some teams that had better athletes than we did, you know, those first 9-10 games, but we just looked a lot slower. I think not having our depth built up to be like a legit powerhouse contender kind of showed those last three games, because our defense looks slow, especially that USC game, like, you know, in the back end. My God. I mean, we were just getting torched. Like, I know USC has some absolute dudes on the, you know, on the outside. And their quarterback looks like he didn't miss all night besides that one Quincy Riley interception. But we just looked so slow kind of compared to what we looked like in that first Georgia Tech game. So I'm interested to see if Jeff can kind of build, you know, that two deep depth for every single position. I know in year two, that might be a lot to ask, but you know, I think with injuries and stuff, you're going to have guys that, you know, are backups that are able to play at that high level when guys get nicked up.
Yeah, you saw it just you know, defensively when Jarvis Brownlee got hurt about midway through the year, and he still was playing at the end of the season, but he was never the full-time starter again. And when Storm Duck came into games, like every team just picked on him, and it was very visible in the USC game. They were throwing at him every single time. Like, nobody wants to throw at Quincy Riley for obvious reasons, so you've got to have somebody on the opposite side that can step up. And when Brownlee went down, we never really had that, and I think it changed the way that we played defensively. By the way, Storm Duck is leaving. He declared for the draft. Jarvis Brownlee declared for the draft. I think that we'll hear something on Quincy Riley soon. I think that he's probably leaning towards coming back, which would be a huge thing for next season.
Man, that would be nice.
It'd be right up there with getting Ashton back. Getting arguably the two. I don't think there's any argument about it. The two best defensive players from your team, that was a pretty good defensive team for most of the year, back for next season would be enormous. But you've got to bring in somebody else. Like the secondary has to be bolstered. It can't just be the Quincy Riley show. I know we got Jalen Timber from Florida, who now is apparently he's committed to us, but he's visiting Texas A&M, which, you know, doesn't really kind of flies in the face of the definition of commitment. We brought in a couple of safeties. We're going to need help there. Cam Kelly's leaving. I think Devin Neal is coming back, but God, he was terrible in the USC game. So you've got to build up some spots. We need guys in the secondary to help out. We probably need a couple more guys in the defensive front. Jeff's going out. He's getting some offensive linemen, which is great, trying to build some depth there. Wide receiver, I said it a few weeks ago, we were going to take a huge hit at that position. We've definitely taken a huge hit at that position. Kevin Coleman and Amari Huggins-Bruce have both entered the portal. Some less utilized guys have entered the portal. What do you make of the portal defections? Because there are, we know this is going to happen every year. Every program is dealing with this, but there are some Louisville fans that I'm starting to see with some of the bigger names, some guys that have played meaningful snaps this past year entering the portal who are like, okay, this is kind of concerning at this point that we're losing some of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to fight with anyone who has concern over it. I just think that's just it's the cliche answer. That's just the way college football is going right now. I mean, I think with our portal ranking the last 2 years, like, and I don't think Jeff wants to live like this forever. I think he wants, you know, to bring in guys and develop and things of that nature. But I also think he knows the importance of like getting this program off to a good start, and he needs guys immediately. But when that happens, when you're always, you know, bringing in guys, there's going to be some defections as well. So I don't think it's a huge deal. I mean, the Amari Huggins-Bruce, yeah, that one stung a little bit, but honestly, like, yeah, he didn't, I don't think he got maybe the looks that he should have from a wide receiver standpoint, from a touches standpoint, but like, he also didn't absolutely blow me away. Yes, he had some nice plays, but I think this is just part of the process. I think we'll get some guys in here, but I think eventually you want to get to a point where you're not having to totally rely on the transfer portal, and you're able to kind of develop from within and, you know, have those recruits pan out for you. So we'll see. I mean, it's still early. Hopefully guys like Stanquan Clark, you know, Jamari Johnson, hopefully those guys, you know, start developing here, Pierce Clarkson, and we kind of see the fruits of the staff's labor when it comes to recruiting. But as far as the portal goes right now, that's just kind of the world that we live in if we want to kind of contend with some of these teams.
I kind of think that Jeff is willing to do this long term. Like, I sort of think
I think there's – no, you're right. I think there's always going to be the transfer portal. But, like, I mean, I do think deep down he wants to successfully – and I think every coach does. They want to successfully develop guys. But you're right. I mean, I think the portal's going to be a big part going forward. Who knows if it'll get regulated or not. But I think Jeff's just an old-school guy, and he would like to see guys stay and develop. But he knows that's just – kind of not the world we live in right now.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think every coach would love to have it be the old way where guys are coming in, they're staying for 3 or 4 years, nobody's transferring, all that stuff. I think with it being set up the way that it is, Jeff sees this as our best opportunity to be a perennial contender. I think that he thinks that, look, we've gotten more NIL money than most programs in college football. We've shown that the last couple of years. I think you're going to continue to see big portal classes and then smaller recruiting classes that are like this year's, where it's 14, 15 guys that he hopes can develop over the course of 2 or 3 years that can stick around and become guys that get on the field as redshirt sophomores or juniors or whatever. But I don't think it's going to ever go back to the way that it was, where we're having 25 player class of 2027 and we're hoping those guys stick around forever. It's just going to, like, we're going to find out who our starters are in the transfer portal. We're going to find out the guys who are going to, we maybe see in 3 years in the recruiting class.
Does it concern you at all that, like, I mean, the old school way of doing it, again, I sound like an old man. I mean, you have to be there a year or two to kind of get ingrained in the offense and defensive schemes and learn everything. And, you know, we're bringing guys in during spring practice and, you know, they're supposed to know the entire playbook and make an impact by the end of August. To me, there's a little bit of concern there, but like you said, I think he's going to try to balance it as much as possible, but in the long term, doing it that way, it scares me a little bit.
No, I'm with you. And it's like, Jeff runs a really complex offense where he has sets where, Dan, you got to stop moving around here. he has sets where we run a ton of different things out of the same look. And you've got to be kind of a cerebral player to be able to digest all that and have a good handle of it in just, what, 6-7 months. And look, we've gotten some kids from the Ivy League. We've gotten some kids that run similar systems. I think you just have to trust the staff that they've done their research and that they've gotten players that they feel like can be fits here, both in terms of their skill sets and their cognitive ability. And hopefully that's, it worked out pretty well in year one. Hopefully it can work out even better in year two. Do we have to talk about basketball?
I mean, I honestly, and I said this last year, I said the same thing. I feel bad for you and Nick Coffey and whoever else is on the radio. Like, I don't know how you can just simply go back every day and kind of dissect and try to analyze like what's going on with the team when we're all watching kind of the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go on in 3 hours and I'm going to say the same shit that I've said for the last 2 months. Like,
yeah,
you know, every now and then something will happen that will get me mad enough to kind of go on like a rant and but like for the most part, like, what do you want me to say? It's the same. We've got 2.5 months of this. Nothing changes. The post-game press conferences are all the same. The way the team plays is all the same. Like, the podcast, I mean, when we started, we were doing like 2 episodes a week. We're reacting to the midweek game. We're previewing the weekend game and then reacting to that. Like, we're doing all this stuff. Like, there's no point in us doing this. I genuinely think that people don't really want us to talk about basketball in any sort of serious form. The only thing they want to hear is, you know, is he going to get fired? What's the latest on the coaching search? What's happening behind the scenes? Like, give us some juice. But as far as like, hey, they look bad. They still look bad. They're going to look bad. Their net ranking is, you know, 265. Like, nobody even cares about that anymore. Like, nobody's – I went straight from the radio to Mojito in Havana for Mary was doing like a little birthday dinner with her sister and her cousins, and we brought all the kids and stuff. And so, you know, we were trying to leave in time to be home for the game, but we were still waiting for our check as the game was starting. So I missed like the first, you know, 4 to 8 minutes. And we're at a Louisville restaurant on the night at the time of a Louisville game that's on national TV. It's on ESPN2. None of the TVs at the restaurant had the game on. They had Wheel of Fortune. They had ESPN. they had the SEC network on. Like, and nobody asked them to change. Like just nobody cares right now. It's so, so sad. I'm not going to go on the same rant, but you know, Louisville did lose to Virginia last night. I don't know how to handle this, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. We don't have to talk about the X's and O's of the game. I think what's interesting to me is, like, the administration and whoever, you know, is ultimately making this decision to keep Kenny around. And it could, maybe it'll be two or three more games, or maybe it'll be the end of the year. But I just feel like the longer that you do this, you're sending the fans into this, like, unified abyss of just not caring about basketball. Like, the longer this goes on, I mean, I'm so excited. There's a golf tournament on this weekend. I could not be more excited. I'm probably going to watch as much as humanly possible, just because there's such a void left from really not caring or having Louisville men's basketball in my life. And I never thought that it would reach this point. I think everyone said this in a million different ways, but it's true. I think, like, the fan base is kind of uniting, and just the sentiment of apathy, like, all right, they played, they lost, nothing's changed. You know, when's this going to happen? I do feel like if a move was made, and maybe their thinking is, hey, we don't have a plan in place to bring anyone in for the rest of the season. To me, you could put Josh Hurd on the sidelines the rest of the season, and I think you would find some sort of unification of the fan base saying, like, all right, we turn the page here. It's time to move on. But if you just keep running out this lackluster product, it shows that the administration, that, you know, it's a slap in the face of the fans, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that you've, like, I feel nothing when the games happen anymore. Yep. I never thought that I would ever get to that place, even as recently as, like, 2 years ago when we were going through the tough season with Chris Mack and Mike Pegues. Like, I still cared. Like, I hated what was happening. I hated hearing some of the stories about things that were happening, but I still felt emotions when the actual games were taking place, and I still cared when we won and when we lost. And the last 2 years have just dulled all my senses, and it's, I do think that if you had brought in an interim before Christmas, that the fans would have rallied a little bit. There would have been at least a momentary bump in people paying more attention and kind of, you know, showing their support to the players. I don't think it would have changed that much big picture. I think the next 2 months were still going to be bad.
Yeah.
It's a weird spot for everybody to be in. There's no question about it. And it feels like we're just kind of riding this thing out for the next 80 days or however long it's going to be. And until we can turn the page to whatever's next. And I listened to, like, Josh had the interview with Eric Crawford that everyone reacted to, where he made it known that Kenny Payne was going to be the coach going into the new year. I do think that it sounded differently than it read. If you actually listen to it, he was trying to make it known to the fans that he sees what's happening. He's upset about what's happening. Right. And this is not a guarantee that Kenny Payne's going to be here for the rest of the season. It's not a guarantee that Kenny Payne's going to be here next year. He was saying, what, Kenny Payne's got to start making deposits with the fan base. Well, you know, losing by 22 at Virginia is not exactly a deposit where we looked hapless and lifeless and all that stuff. So I don't know. I mean,
let me ask you this. You've probably talked about this on the radio and I've missed it. Like, do you think it's a buyout thing? Like, do you think they're just trying to save money, or do you actually think they're really evaluating from a basketball standpoint still, or is there strings being pulled behind the scenes that are saying, no, we're keeping this guy, you know, for the however long future?
I don't mind getting into it. I've talked about it on the radio a little bit. I'll talk about it here. If you don't listen to the radio show, that's fine. And I would like to think that I've done this long enough and have a solid enough track record for people to know that, like, I'm not saying things like this when I don't absolutely know that it's true. I hear a million things a day, especially in times like this. And unless I know beyond the shadow of a doubt, I don't say them. There's a lot of stuff that I think is true. There's a lot of stuff that I think is bullshit, and you have to kind of filter through all that. But I do think, I mean, Christmas week, there was absolutely at one point in time a plan in place to fire Kenny Payne after the Kentucky game, and there was an interim coach that was ready to go, that thought that Friday they were going to be introduced as the interim head coach at the University of Louisville. And again, I'm not just like, this isn't like I heard from somebody who heard from somebody. These are people directly involved. I say this one with 100% certainty. There was a plan in place to have an interim coach take over for the rest of the season. Why that didn't happen, I've got less clarity on. I think that it was out of Josh Hurd's control, which is another issue in and of itself. But I can't give you the specifics on that because I don't know them. And the people that I know that were involved in this, they don't know the specifics either. But like, Josh at one point was ready to pull the trigger. Somebody or somebody's above him said no. I don't know what their rationale was. And we've got Kenny Payne still. I don't think it's just a buyout thing. The thing about the buyout, everyone's like, oh, you know, $2 million is no small thing with the state of the program and all this stuff. If we save $2 million, the buyout doesn't go down until March 31st. If you fire him whenever we lose, presumably in the ACC tournament, which would be mid-March, you can't afford to just sit on the sidelines with, you know, sitting on your thumbs for 3 weeks because you want to save $2 million. Like, they'll have to fire him before March 31st. So, like, the whole buyout thing I don't think comes into play at all in this. I don't know what the rationale is. I don't know if it's powerful people with a lot of money that are into the program saying you need to give him more of a chance, you need to hold on. But that's where we are right now. And, I mean, I can't give you all the specifics. I can't give you all the answers. I don't know what Josh's thinking is outside of what he said publicly. But that's the position that we're in right now, and that's where we're sitting in limbo for the next 80 days.
No, I mean, I think, you know, if that's what you heard, I believe that's a good rationale of perhaps what happened. It's just kind of, it's disheartening, especially, you know, and again, I don't know for certain, but if Josh really isn't the one ultimately making a decision, to me, I mean, that's just such a bad look. I don't know. I do think if Josh was the one ultimately making decisions, then we would have heard from him a lot more than maybe just like one statement after the UK game. So it kind of leads me to believe that, you know, maybe this has to get a stamp of approval from somebody else. But I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not in that world. I don't know what the rationale is to keep running this god-awful product out night after night and driving the fan base farther and farther away and further apart. But maybe they see something that I don't. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think this whole thing goes back to the powers that be at the university that are still around from the past decade. There was a sense, overwhelming sense, that Tom Jurich kind of ran around unchecked back in the day. That you know, he did whatever he wanted to. Athletics didn't have to answer to anybody. If he wanted something done, he was just going to go do it. He didn't need approval from the board. He didn't need approval. Like, James Ramsey just kind of rubber stamped whatever he wanted to do. And UofL, after all the stuff that happened in 2015, 2017, and around that time, wanted to kind of make sure that that never happened again. And you've seen, ever since Jurich and Pitino got fired, UofL's kind of, there's been some micromanaging going on. You had the, I think it's not exactly a big secret that there was conflict between Neely Bendapudi and Vince Tyree, and it ultimately resulted in that suspension of Chris Mack, and Mack feeling like he didn't have the support of the brass at UofL. It ultimately led in Vince Tyree abruptly trying to go to Florida State and then quitting, and then Neely Bendapudi bolting for Penn State. And now I do think that you're still in a position where Josh doesn't have the carte blanche that Tom Jurich had. And you know, there are people that you have to answer to when you want to get things done. And maybe that changes if he has, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of a lot of success moving forward. But right now that seems to be the situation that he's in. And it's probably the situation that he's going to be in. But I do think he'll have, if Payne gets fired at the end of the season, and I think he will be, I do think that Josh will have free reign to bring in who he wants to bring in this go round. And I think that this is the decision, this is the move that's going to kind of define the early part of his tenure as athletic director. Because, you know, Kenny Payne, there's a lot of sense that he got pressured into hiring Payne. He was still the interim AD at that point. And even then, like, it was the safe hire. It was the easy hire. It was the popular hire. And the same was true with Jeff Brohm. Everyone wanted you to make that hire. It was kind of an easy thing to do. This will be the first really difficult, like, you've got to go out there. There's no obvious candidate. There's no white whale that the whole fan base wants that's attainable, it seems like, at this point. Like, whatever you do is going to kind of define your name at U of L. And so I think he knows that. I think that he'll have to trust his instincts, trust everything that he's learned coming up as a guy in athletics, and hopefully he can get it done. And U of L men's basketball will finally feel like it's headed back in the right direction at some point in the relatively near future. I don't have anything else to say on the basketball front. Do you have any parting thoughts here before we start taking some questions?
I miss Dennis.
I miss Dennis too. I love Dennis. With Dennis, I think we win last night by probably 13.
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
I mean, shout out Curtis Williams, I guess. I will say this. I mean, I don't know. I would like to see, I mean, again, every time I ask for some with this staff, it usually doesn't happen. I would like to see some more development from our freshmen. It was nice to see Curtis finally get off the snide. I think he was 4 of 6 last night. You know, Tyler, I think, turned the ball over 4 times to 1 assist. Caleb Glenn, I don't think, attempted a shot. He did have 5 or 6 rebounds, I think. But, you know, if the season's going the way it is, I would like to see some development out of those guys.
Yeah, Tyler against Virginia right now is sort of a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
And he did block like a 7-footer last night. That was cool. But besides that, there wasn't a whole lot. Wasn't a whole lot to get excited about. All right, we're going to take some questions from you guys on Twitter. Before we do that, reminding you about our sponsors over at Homefield Apparel. They've got a new Denny Crum shirt. They've got that fantastic bomber jacket that Danny now owns. They've got all sorts of great stuff for your new year if you're trying to, you know, redo your Cardinal wardrobe for 2024, or if you just want some fun gear for some other schools. They've got tons of stuff to cycle through over at their website, homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code CHRONICLE15 when you check out. It'll save you 15% off your first purchase from Homefield Apparel. Follow them on their social media channels. It's the best way to keep up with new releases. Homefield Apparel without an E on Twitter. Homefield Apparel spelled normally on Instagram. Also sign up for their newsletter. You'll get all the latest updates about their new releases, their new deals. They have deals going on throughout the year. They'll have some March Madness deals coming up once the tournament rolls around. We love our guys over at Homefield Apparel. Homefieldapparel.com, promo code CHRONICLE15. All right, we asked for questions on Twitter. You guys, as always, delivered in a big way. Let's take some. I mean, a lot of these, to sum up before we just get into it, I mean, a lot of these are like, hey, who are the big names out there who could take the job? And, like, you know, I think we're going to get that question pretty much every week until this job officially opens up. I mean, yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Brad Satori, my guy, the big guy, says, have any other blue blood programs had hires like this? I find myself betting against the team I love every week with a tremendous amount of guilt.
How bad was Matt Doherty at Carolina?
Matt Doherty was bad. He wasn't. I know these things because, like, we've looked them up on the radio show multiple times over the last couple of years.
Ewing. Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Well, I guess, do you consider Georgetown a blue blood at this point?
At one time, yeah. I guess not anymore.
Like, Doherty was bad, but he also, I mean, like, his first game, his first year, I mean, like, they won the ACC. They went 26-7. And then after that, he went 8-20 and then 19-16. So, like, he wasn't nearly Kenny Payne bad. And, like nobody's Kenny Payne bad. We talk about Billy Gillespie. Like, I've seen many Louisville fans over the past couple of years be like, this is our Gillespie. I'd kill for Kenny Payne to be Billy Gillespie. Billy Gillespie won SEC Coach of the Year. Yeah. They went to the tournament his first year and almost made the tournament his second year. Like, Gillespie was not in the same stratosphere as Kenny Payne. I don't think anybody's gone through something like that. Like, any blue blood has had a hire that's been this much of just a complete swing and miss.
Was Gillespie there 2 years or 3?
2.
Okay. That's a good measuring stick. Yeah. I would consider Georgetown a blue blood at one time. And I mean, yeah, heck, they were under John Thompson. I mean, John Thompson, they had Roy Hibbert and Jeff Green, and they were constantly in the top five. And then it just seems like out of nowhere, they're the bottom dweller with Ewing. So I'd put that one up there. Yeah, I don't know. Is there one that you're thinking of?
I mean, Dory's the one that stands out, but yeah. In our no blue blood. I mean, I guess Indiana fell in hard times, but that wasn't necessarily about the hire. You know, they won five or six games in Crean's first season, but everybody knew that was the case. Like they were picking up guys from the rec center to play on that team. And you know, it was a slow rebuild after the Kelvin Sampson stuff. But like that wasn't this. Kansas, I don't think has ever had a hire that's been like this at all. I mean, if we're talking about the best of the best programs, no, I think this is as bad as it's ever been for anybody. And that's saying something. That's the position we're in right now. So yeah, that'll make you feel good. Sean Vincel says, who is on your UofL all decade team starting five from the 90s, 2000s and 10s? That's all it's a loaded question. I mean, my all decade team from the 90s, let's see. DeJuan Wheat, Cliff Rozier inside. I guess I have to go Cliff over Samaki.
Reese Gaines.
Yeah, he's more of a 2000s guy, but I guess he started. He was 99 through 03.
Yeah.
I'll say DeJuan, Greg Minor.
One year Samaki.
I still go Cliff Rozier, Dwayne Morton, and yes. I don't know. I mean, the fifth spot's kind of up for grabs. Maybe Alvin Sims? I don't know.
Yeah, it's we're leaning towards early 90s there. It's because obviously.
Well, I mean, it's mid to late. I mean, DeJuan graduated in 97.
Yeah. No Cameron Murray. No
Cameron Murray.
No Rashard Brooks. All right.
The 98-99 teams aren't going to be well represented. I mean, I guess Marcus Maben would get a look.
No, I mean, I think you mentioned all the good names. Left off Simon Nadenhoff, but
love you, Simon.
Yeah. No, I would some five out of those that you just named. I maybe take Reese out because, like you said, that was his freshman year. So
yeah, 2000s. I would have Reese there. I'd have Reese, I'd have Garcia, I'd have Taekwon, I'd have Terrence Williams, and then if we're doing center, I mean, who's the best, like Ellis Miles?
Yeah, I mean, he was our five man, even though he was
not really
shaped
a five.
Like a power forward.
Yeah.
I
take it back. I would have Padgett at center.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Man, that's Ellis is tough to leave off, though. He was so good.
And then this, like the last decade, I mean, I feel like it's going to be, God, you've got all-stars to choose from all over the place. Russ Payton, but I mean, you're leaving off like Donovan Mitchell, Terry Rozier.
I don't care. I'm still going Russ Payton.
I'm going Russ Payton. I mean, if we're doing like forward, guard, like all that stuff, if we're just doing the five best players, like Russ Payton, Trez, Terry. And then, I mean, Donovan, I know Donovan didn't do a ton in college, but he was first team all ACC his sophomore year. He was pretty damn good by the time that he left. So those would be, I think, the five best players. God, and you're leaving Gorgie off. You gotta have Gorgie in there somewhere.
Yeah. Gorgie's on the team.
It's a tough question to answer.
Yeah, no, that one's tough. I'm trying to think, Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking like, Ray Spalding, he had a nice year here, but I think you lean heavy towards that 2013 team. Trez, I mean, literally Trez, Gorgie, Russ, and Payton for me are like four automatics.
Yeah.
And then maybe Terry. I'd put Terry over Donovan. I think
Terry was great. Terry was his sophomore year. He was fantastic. Patrick Smith says, what are reasonable expectations for next football season? It seems like we could have a better team, but a worse record given the schedule. I mean, I think reasonable expectation is, man, like 8, 9, 10 wins. Like, so somewhere in that ballpark. I think that we do have to go at Clemson. We go at Notre Dame. We go at Kentucky. I mean, those are three teams that are pretty good every year and that we've struggled to beat. I mean, obviously, Kentucky we haven't beaten in forever. And now we have to play them on the road where we haven't won since 2017. Notre Dame, we've never, or, you know, I guess we beat them in South Bend in 2014, lost them the last time we went up there. They're going to be good again. They always are. That'll be a tough game. And then Clemson, we've never beaten, period. So, yeah, I mean, I think the schedule says that it's maybe you lose one more game than you thought in the regular season. I still think that with this team, because I feel good about the roster that we're assembling, I'm thinking 8 or 9 wins is the bar. Again, this coming year, which is kind of where I was going into last season.
Off topic, have you ever been more anxious about anything than seeing how good this Tyler Shuck actually is?
Very. I've definitely talked myself into it more than I did with Plummer last year. Like, I thought Plummer would be kind of who he ended up being, game manager and, you know, all this stuff. I think Shuck can make throws that Plummer can't. I think he's got more mobility. I think that we got him for, you know, you have to talk in terms like this in this day and age. We got him for sort of a cheap price. We were able to spend more money on other positions when it comes to NIL and stuff like that. And I think when you've seen the way that the transfer portal has fallen at the quarterback spot for other programs, it makes me feel better about going ahead and taking him early in the process. But yeah, if he comes out and he gets hurt, which has been an issue for him, or he just makes terrible decisions and sucks, like we're kind of fucked. So we need him to be pretty good. Or we need somebody, one of the quarterbacks that's coming back from this past year on scholarship, to really develop and really be in a position where they can win us big-time football games next season, whether that's, you know, Pierce or Brady Allen or Harrison Bailey or whoever.
Yeah, I think you probably talked about it to your blue in the face on the radio, but, I mean, those last couple games, it could not have been more apparent that, A, I think Jack had lost some confidence that he had at the beginning of the year, and he was afraid to make some throws. I don't think he had maybe the arm talent or the accuracy to fit it in the windows that Jeff likes. But B, I mean, we really lack playmakers on the outside. And I think that Jeff is gung-ho about making sure that we can get guys on the outside who can get separation, get tight ends, you know, who are versatile in the passing and running game. Cause it was very apparent at the end of the year that he was struggling. Him and Brian were struggling to draw up plays to kind of get guys open.
Yeah. No question about it. And I think getting Ja'Cory Brooks, who's an Alabama kid, 5-star prospect back in the day, is a big deal. And then getting Colin Lacey, who's the, according to a lot of these networks, the number one wide receiver available in the portal, is a huge deal as well. Brown Magic says, probably been asked before, but who's the worst head coach, Ron Cooper or Kenny Payne? I mean, again, like, I don't think there's any comparison for what Kenny Payne's doing right now. Ron Cooper, as bad as he was here, he still had what? Like a winning season his first year? We went 7-4 his first year. He had a winning record against Kentucky in 3 years. He went 7-4, 5-6, and then had the 1-10 disaster season. Like, Kenny Payne, after last night, is, what, 9-37 as a head coach? He's 0-20 in games away from the KFC Yum Center. He's 2-21 in ACC games. Like, Kragthorpe, Cooper, whoever, like, Chris Mack, whatever, like, bad hire you want to bring up in Louisville history, there's nobody who compares to Kenny Payne unfavorably.
I hate when people are like, gosh, like, you need to stop piling on Kenny or whatever, like, he's one of us. Like, I get that, but, like, my God, these stats are an abomination.
We haven't won a road game in 2 years. Yeah, two full calendar years. More than 2 years.
Like, you know, I'm trying to think of just, we're not like Colorado State basketball, or, and sorry, Sean Moth, but like, I'm thinking just like the most like middle of the road programs who don't have like a history. Like, I mean, we're Louisville, and we don't have a road win in 2 years. What are we doing? Like, are we just going to run this out and just put a middle finger up to our fans? I just don't understand it.
I feel like I've said that, I've screamed the same thing into a void. Like, I have that same, I'll go on these rants, I'll start talking, and I'll have to stop and be like, we're fucking Louisville, for God's sake. And
I know
it happens all the time. I can't say that on the radio, but I want to. Dr. Colby says, what's the most likely landing spot for Coach Zan Payne? I do love seeing Zan in at the end of the games now. You know, it used to be we had have human victory cigars. Now we have human, you know, white flags that we're throwing in. He and Aiden McCool, who I'll give props to Aiden McCool on this podcast.
Dove in the stands, yep.
Also, the only guy who ever reacts to anything on the bench. Like there was a clip, I put it on Twitter last night, of, you know, Brandon Huntley-Hatfield turns, gets obviously fouled, and Aiden McCool and I think Trey White, who was out and in street clothes, are the only guys who stand up and like have their hands up and are like, come on. The coaching staff, I don't think any of them moved. If you told me they all were asleep, I would have been like, yeah, that's what it looks like. Like, none of them even stood up. None of them moved. Kenny Payne didn't move. Like, Aiden McCool was into the game on the bench. He's the quintessential, like, end-of-the-bench type guy. At least he hasn't checked out, because it seems like everybody else has. I love Aiden McCool.
The worst part, I mean, whatever. There was a million worse parts. But the last minute of the game, which is, like, garbage time, we still got out-hustled for rebounds. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, how is – I mean, I don't want to put McCool in this boat because he dove in the stands. But, like – some of the other guys, I'm like, oh, okay, we'll just let them get the rebound. And, I mean, Jesus, what a disaster.
It's so, so bad. It, on every level, every part, there's nothing good about it ever. It's so bad. Grushki says, what are you going to do for the next 2.5 months? I have thought about, like, taking up a new hobby or something. Like, I don't mean, thankfully, I still write about college basketball on a freelance basis, so I pay attention to the sport overall. But as far as the Louisville stuff is concerned, like, I just – it's not even like, I have to do the radio show every day. I've got to write on the website. We do the podcast. So you have to like kind of talk. But like, I feel like we need new stuff to talk about. Like, maybe you and I need to get really, we've never been big video game guys. I think you and I need to like get maybe like one of those Oculus headsets and like get into that and just talk about that for 30 minutes every week.
Yeah, I have found myself playing my son's Nintendo Switch a little bit. I've been playing a little bit of Mario Party. It's actually pretty fun, I'm not going to lie. Me and you weren't, like, I feel like some of our friends were. We never got into God, what are some of the games? I sound like such an old man.
I didn't realize how big some of our friends were into video games until I moved in with our buddy Lytle and one of our other friends Kevin at like 26, 27, and like, you know, I knew that some of our friends played video games. Like, I was always just like a sports video game guy growing up. Like, I played the college football game. I played Madden. I was big into NHL, Triple Play, like those games. But like, it was the first year that I had the college basketball gig for SB Nation. And I'd be upstairs like working late, like midnight, like watching the games, reacting to it. And like downstairs, I would just hear like, oh, fuck that. And, like, I'd go down there and they've got like the headsets on and like they're playing with some of our other friends and they're like throwing shit. They're playing like Call of Duty and Halo. Like, I had no idea until I moved in that they were those types of guys. And look, like, I mean, like, you know, we're talking like our buddy Lytle, like, very successful, like, good looking guy, has a lot going for him. It's not like he's like this loser, but great looking guy. Like, all of our friends, like some of them are very, very into these video games. And like, some of our other friends aren't. And they'd be like, you guys, you've got to take the headsets off. You've got to stop doing this.
Yeah. I mean, staying on this topic, big debate in the Sennard household. My son wants Fortnite and like most of his friends play it. I'm not going to lie, I've never watched a second of Fortnite. I don't really know what it involves. It's just kind of a hearsay thing. Like, me personally, like, and I always want to, you know, me and my wife are a team, want to stay on the team here, but my wife is not she's not one to give in. She doesn't like video games to begin with and really is not going for Fortnite, and it's been like a kind of a struggle in our household. So I guess I'll leave it up to the listeners. Is Fortnite okay for a 9-year-old? I feel bad because I know some of his friends play it and we don't let them, but I think we got to put our foot down somewhere. And I guess this is where we're drawing a line in the sand.
Dude, I am so not looking forward to these types of decisions because, like, nowadays you've got, like, when do they get a cell phone? Like, oh, well, you know, Jimmy's got a cell phone in my class. It's third grade. Like, yeah. When do you let them on, like, Instagram? Like, Mary's cousins are starting to follow me on Instagram that are, like, in fourth grade. And, you know, every now and then I'll have kind of a dicey story up there. Like, like I want to put like some rap lyrics in a funny video of my kids. Like, so yeah, I mean, I, I'm not looking forward to those conversations where it's like, when can they start playing video games? When can they get phones? When can they get on apps? Like my nephews who are now on, like one's in college, one's a junior in high school, one's a sophomore in high school. Like my brother and my sister-in-law, like just did not let them have cell phones until they got to like high school. And they drew a hard line in the sand and look, they turned out pretty well. They're good kids. They get good grades. They're good athletes. So maybe that's the way to go. I don't know. John Snyder says, what are Danny's thoughts on who he wants as the next hire? I personally think Chris Beard is the guy. I've heard rumblings that Will Wade is getting looks from us. What's the preference between Dusty May and Oates if we try to stay away from off the court issues? Well, Danny, I mean, do you want to, you've been a big Mick Cronin guy on this podcast for the last
Jesus
couple of years.
Christ.
It's a rough period for Mick to be this bad.
Dude, I mean, look, I texted you this morning. Like, I really am. I'm a full body of work guy. Like, I think what Mick did at Cincinnati, bring it. And again, you guys probably heard me say this 30 times. I think he like rebuilt that program. I think it wasn't as big of a rebuild as at UCLA, but he definitely took them to another level. Obviously went to a Final Four. I think he changes the culture at programs. He makes them hard nosed. So those are the pros. Okay. The cons are his sideline demeanor, definitely, especially when things are going bad, is very divisive, is a word I would say.
I love politician Dan here.
Two, things are very, very bad at UCLA right now. And like, if you bring him in now, like the way our fan base is just salivating for like a successful coach, if you bring in like a UCLA coach that's possibly under 500, I mean, there's a chance that there's anarchy. So it may be too risky of a hire at this point, and it just pains me that Mick is shitting the bed right now and just saying the craziest shit after his post games. I don't know what the hell he's doing.
It was bad last night.
Dude, I'm like, Mick, what, come on, buddy. Like,
help me out here.
Yeah, seriously. So, like, as much as I love Mick, I hate to say maybe I am cooling a little bit. We'll see how the season ends. I'm not ruling him out completely. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. The usual Chris Beard and Will Wade, I just don't think that's going to happen. Like Beard, I don't know. Like, am I an asshole? Am I a complete dick? If I'm like, yeah, if he was hired, like I would support it. I don't know if I'd support it, but the way college athletics are now, I mean, shit, you got cheating in every single fucking sport.
Yeah, yes, but his issues aren't cheating.
This is a moral issue. I mean, this is a moral issue.
Wade is the NCAA one. Beard is some other stuff.
No, I get that. And I'm not supportive of that or whatever. But like what I'm getting at is it's almost like a fuck just win, I guess. Which is sad to say, but that's kind of what college sports has become. So I'm not saying I would support it.
For sure.
I'm just indifferent right now on how I'd feel about it, because I do think that he would do well.
First of all, you think your timing is bad for Mick Cronin. The Bring Brom Home guy who's been doing the Mick is the pick, I think ever since he started doing that, I think UCLA's 0-6. So that's like, his timing's been worse than anybody. As far as the Beard and Wade stuff, I don't think it's going to go away, so we may as well just address it head on here. Because there was a report, I don't know if it was a report, there have been some speculation that like Will Wade is getting looks from Louisville. I think Will Wade, this is the most obvious statement of all time, would love to take the Louisville job. Yeah. I think he feels like he got fucked by the NCAA, which, you know, we can argue that till we're red in the face. He feels like he belongs to be somewhere better than McNeese State, and certainly he does. He's killing it at McNeese. They just beat Michigan. I think they're 12-2. They're probably going to win the Southland. Would not be shocked if they won a game in the NCAA tournament. For all his faults, and let's make no bones about it, Will Wade is an asshole. Like, everybody that I talk to in college basketball that covers the game or the coaches in the game, they hate Will Wade. They're like, this dude was a brazen cheater. He's a dick. But he can coach. Like the results speak for themselves. He did great stuff at VCU. He took LSU to a level where they're not used to being, and then the NCAA stuff happened, and he's been knocked down to McNeese State. I think he can coach. I think he's a huge asshole. The issue is, do you worry at this point about Louisville being even more stigmatized than it already is by bringing in a noted cheater to your program when you're trying to get over that reputation? Or do you just say, hey, we were cleared of any wrongdoing. This guy pretty much got cleared of any wrongdoing, at least by the IRP. Middle's fingers up to the NCAA. Fuck all y'all. Like, let's roll. I don't know if U of L would do that, but maybe we have to have that conversation in a couple months. The Chris Beard thing, I mean, look, if you want to say, you know, he was accused of domestic violence. It wound up getting him fired at Texas. His, I think, fiance wound up dropping all the charges. So if you want to say like nothing was ever proven that he did anything, I think there've been rumors for a long time that Chris Beard maybe is one of these people that drinks a little too much and has some issues with that. And maybe he's a ticking time bomb. I don't know if that's true for sure. But that would be a risk that you would have to take on. The issue with both of these guys, the stigma is going to be there. You're going to get dirty looks. People are going to write think pieces about how this program is so dirty. They both can definitely coach. There's no question about that. Chris Beard has Ole Miss undefeated. I think that they'll come back down to earth once conference play starts. But the dude can – if you can get Texas Tech within one shot of winning a national title, you can fucking coach. And Chris Beard can fucking coach. So I've got no idea what Josh is thinking as far as whether or not these guys are in play. He'd have to – it'd be a big sell job for sure, I think, to a large segment of the fan base and certainly to the college basketball public. But I don't know. We will cross that bridge when we get there. But those are names that I think the fan base is not going to drop. They're going to be around for a while. We're going to keep hearing about them for the next couple months. Let's see. Fake Chandler, this is up your alley, Dan. Says, how many more swings does Jersey Jerry have in him? I know you've been following the Jersey Jerry hole in one thing.
Dude, it was electric. He got the hole in one this morning. He had Tom Brady tweeting at him. I don't know. In these dog days of January, these slow months, like sometimes just something stupid on the internet grabs your attention and some guy trying to hit on a hole in one. And basically, I mean, he did take, a little nap last night, which was hilarious. He had like 34,000 people watching him sleep. So it was like a mini Truman Show, but just something to mindless entertainment. But I was happy. I think it was like the 25th hundred or somewhere around there swing that he finally got a hole in one. So good for Jersey Jerry.
Lance Edwards says, did you ever think the much-discussed Larry Eustachy tenure would seem like a dream compared to what Coach U of L actually has?
Now, where is Larry?
I don't know. I'm scared to look that up. I mean, he just retired recently from Colorado State. I think he's done now coaching. The whole Larry Eustachy was going to be the coach if Patino didn't get the job thing. For what it's worth, Tom Jurich like vehemently denies that was ever the case. Like, he said, I think he said publicly, I know he said it to me, I think he said it on the radio show, like, he's like, I don't know where that came from. I guess people just thought we were in the same general area. We'd worked together. We had a relationship that he was the second choice. He's like, I would not have given the job to Larry Eustachy if I hadn't gotten Rick. He's like, I don't know who my second choice was. I was so focused on Rick. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. But if we had gotten Larry Eustachy here, look, we would have won. He won everywhere that he coached. It would have just ended, you know, in disgrace, which is not something that we also didn't get used to over time. So, yeah, I think the Larry Eustachy era at Louisville, which we always were like, oh, God, thank God we avoided that. It probably would have been better overall than the Kenny Payne era has been.
Yeah, I mean, I think just I think me and you would have been just as successful as Kenny. I'm dead serious when I say that. I mean, you really can't do much worse.
By the way, Larry Eustachy is a senior advisor at Boise State this season.
Gotcha.
Leon okay. Rice, great coach. Go Broncos. I mean, all these questions are just like, how is he not fired yet? When's he going to get fired? How's he not fired? Terry says, how does Louisville have more injuries coming off of a 2-week bye? Make it make more sense, Mike. Yeah, we did have, not only did Dennis Evans and JJ Traynor not come back, we had Trey White and Emmanuel Okorafor also get hurt before this game. I don't know.
Do we think I don't know what's going on. I didn't even look to see if they were on the bench. Like, do we think these are actually injuries, or do you think, like, the timing of these, like, right after Christmas break, not coming back for the first game, could mean something else? I mean, I know Dennis has been out a while, and I guess JJ has too, but.
No, I think it's – I mean, I don't think Emmanuel Okorafor is sitting out to maintain any eligibility. Trey White was very into the game last night on the bench. I think it's just injuries.
I mean, it could have – maybe Kenny read him – believe me, we had some practices like that in high school where you kind of get read the riot act, and it's a lot of rolling the ball on the floor and diving loose ball drills. I'm sure there was some physical practices, at least I hope. That was the case, but
I don't assume anything at this point.
Like, I know. I'm like, what am I doing? Maybe it probably wasn't.
If they didn't practice with a ball for the last 2 weeks, I'd be like, yeah, I mean, that's not a shock to me. You could tell me anything at this point, and I'd be like, yeah, that sounds about right.
I was like, surely they're going to start closing out on 3-point shooters tonight. It's like, it was the exact opposite, actually.
I mean, I was reading I was writing the preview for the game yesterday. And I'm like, oh, Isaac McNeil is shooting 47.8% from three. This guy's going to get so many wide open looks. And sure enough, it was like, we just do not locate shooters ever. We have no idea how to defend the perimeter. It's so embarrassing. Chad Brocky says, if that dude that tackled the judge had eligibility left, would you want to add him for linebacker depth once he gets out of jail? It's a crazy clip.
It really is. I mean, one of the more kind of impressive. I mean, I guess we couldn't see it from the ground up, but the vertical leap looked—it's
unreal.
It truly looked unreal. So, yeah, I don't want to say shout out that guy because he did something wrong, but shout out on your vertical leap, I guess.
Oshak, God, the text have taken us to a dark place now. Oshak Hennessy says, Mike, any thoughts on Kenny Payne being on the Epstein client list? If he is, could we fire him for cause? no, I do not hope that anybody associated with U of L is on the Epstein list.
We're reaching here, people.
God. Nate says, instead of watching the game last night, I watched a guy on YouTube who was 30 plus hours in trying to hit a hole in one on a golf simulator. Would you have 18 more
questions? This is hilarious.
Would you have 18 more recommendations for things I can do for the rest of the season? I don't know. Fall of Civilizations podcast videos on YouTube. That'll kill a solid 3 hours. John says, is Danny ready to embrace the Lions as the true kings of the North? And is he ready for the upcoming implosion of the Vikings roster?
Okay. Who sent this in?
John. Great John. Question.
I think I responded to him a couple weeks ago. No. Listen.
Our division.
I know. Against us a couple weeks ago, Christmas, you all got some calls. All right. It is what it is. However, as much as it pains me, I do need to say congrats to the Lions. Probably want to work on reporting to the refs.
Don't even start. Like I will spend the rest of the podcast talking. Like, I very rarely get that angry about these types of things anymore. I almost couldn't sleep Saturday night. I was so fucking pissed about this thing. We had the Cowboys dead to rights. We beat them on their home field. We always get fucked in Dallas by the refs. Always.
That was that was something. I mean, honestly, I guess NFL playoffs is what I really have to look for. I mean, and Vikes aren't even in it, but I'm sure you at least have that to look forward to, so that'll be fun. Is there a team you want the Lions to play in the first round?
Well, this is why half the reason why I'm so pissed about the official butt fucking on Saturday night is, one, it cost us an outside shot to be the number one seed, which is a huge deal. Still a long shot. We needed the 49ers to fall on their face, and we need to beat the Dolphins this weekend. But, like, that was still out there at that point in time. And then we could have gotten the two seed, which whoever gets in the seventh spot, I think, is a lot more of an attractive first-round opponent than the Rams, who are red hot and plus have our old quarterback. So, like, I don't want to play the Rams. It looks like that's what's going to happen. And also, like, if we do get out of the first round, we probably have to go travel and play at Philly now as opposed to hosting the NFC semifinal game. So, like, all that just sucks. Like, it was a total screw job. I'm still pissed about it, but I don't want to play the Rams. I'm just happy. Like, I really want this to be the year where we win a playoff game. I've seen one playoff victory in my entire life, and I was 6 years old. So, like, I think we said on the podcast before, the two franchises in major American sports that have gone the longest without advancing in the playoffs are the Lions and the Reds, like my two favorite pro teams. I need one of them to do something in the playoffs very soon, or I'm going to have a really hard time, you know, just keeping going as a sports fan with everything that's going on right now with my team. So I need this. I need at least one playoff win. This should be the season. I love the way that Dan Campbell's reacted to the adversity. I think he's handled it perfectly. I think we will win a playoff game, but if they don't, I'm going to be very, very upset, and I'm going to blame this Brad Allen douchebag.
Yeah. I mean, a good friend would be supportive and be arm in arm with you cheering for a Lions playoff victory. I am not a good friend. I will be cheering against them. I like to see Lions fans, including yourself, suffer. It's one of the great joys I have in life. So being on this end of the division with staring up at you all, obviously I'm not used to this. So I'm hoping you have your little fun time in the sun, and then we kind of get back to the Vikings at least being near the top of the division moving forward, although I have no idea what we're going to do. I think Kirk's probably going to come back at least one more year, probably deservedly so, but we need to develop a quarterback at some point.
Well, Dan, a good friend probably also wouldn't bring up fantasy football where okay.
Moving on.
I won the championship, my third championship in the last, I think, 8 years. No big deal. Just the new powerhouse of the league. I don't know how you did, but I think that you're not going to be in the league next year if I'm reading things correctly.
Yeah. I mean.
Relegated.
Again, very dark, dark times in the Sinard household. Not a whole lot to look forward to. Yeah, dead last. Numerous injuries. I'm not going to get into it. But I did start
awful draft
quarterbacks, debatable, but yeah, I will be watching from the sidelines after being relegated this year. So yeah, it'll be nice to kind of clear my head of fantasy after playing for 20 years. So I'm just gonna go yeah, maybe I'll start reading books.
Special assistant at Boise State next year.
Yeah, that's there we go.
I do love that you and I both got an F draft grade from Yahoo. I won the league and you came in last, so you know. They get some right, they get some wrong.
Fuck me. God damn it. This sucks.
Card Kong says, whatever happened to the LCPT last year? Least Cool Person Tournament. The 2022-23 Louisville basketball season won the LCPT. They beat Haley Van Lith in the finals. It was a runaway victory. I kind of took the lazy way out by making them a one nomination. You could have if we did it just the basketball season, like, hey, here's Kenny Payne, here's the players, here's this loss, here's the, like, it would be a whole tournament in and of itself. So you kind of had to be fair.
I need to give and if I'm butchering his last name, sorry, I think it's Matt McGavick.
Yeah,
tweeted last night, Corey Alexander early entry. I mean, this guy, I mean, this is like the guy.
It was the story of the game last night.
Yeah, if you work in an office, this is the guy that watches like a 2-minute highlight clip of like NFL Sundays and then tries to like dominate the conversation on Monday about the NFL. Like, the guy has zero fucking clue what he's talking about, like zero. And he's pushing fucking agendas like I've never seen.
I have to call you out a little bit, because last night I was looking, I knew I'd made some tweets about Corey Alexander in the past. The one that I found was actually him contradicting himself about Mike Begese a couple of years ago. But I did stumble upon you responding to a tweet that I had made from February 23rd, 2021, where you just said, give me all the Corey Alexander stock. I love that guy. And I was like, oh, Dan.
Okay, well, I need to go back and start scrubbing. God knows what else I have in the back end of my tweets. We all make mistakes. I mean, God, now I can't even fucking vouch for Mick Cronin anymore after that tweet. Like, Jesus Christ, my credibility is shot to hell.
I mean, it was the story of the game last night. It wasn't like Louisville fans were more willing. We all knew we were going to lose by, like, you know, 15 to 25 points. Louisville fans were far more like, the lecturing that we're getting from announcers on a nightly basis is so fucking annoying. And him comparing Tony Bennett's first season at Virginia, Tony Bennett, who'd just taken Washington State to multiple Sweet 16s, it's insulting. Like, it's ridiculous to say, oh, they went 16 and 15 in his first year, so you should be putting up with a 9-37 record at Louisville. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, it was so obnoxious. And Corey Alexander sucks overall. You did also tweet. I just found it last year. You said Corey Alexander's going to show up at my funeral. Like, I guess because he was calling so many of our games last year.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I know we're running out of time here. Adam Eden says, are you still dead inside? Of course. Yes, there's no question about it. Dale Hollow Card says, if you can only pick one, would you pick a football win at UK next season or a basketball win at UK next season with a new head coach?
I'm going to say football because
I'm too.
Those wins obviously go a long way versus basketball. I have a feeling no matter who we bring in next year, my guess is we're probably not going to make the tournament again. Turnarounds are, I mean, you can do them in this day and age a little bit faster, but I'm going to say football just because I think that means we're on the right track.
We've got to win in football. I mean, yeah. not having beaten Kentucky since Lamar Jackson left is absurd. It's got to end next year. That's the one that I want. And like, we can have a really good basketball season under a first year head coach next year and lose the UK game. I think that's we had a great season under Rick Pitino when we lost the UK game. Like that's something we can build towards moving forward. Football, we've got to get that done. Like that needs to happen, I think, in order for Brom to have a successful year two. Do you have give me a bold prediction for something that happens in U of L sports this coming year in 2024. Give me one thing that you think is going to happen over the next 12 months.
Oh man, that's a good question. Like I could say something outlandish. Like make the College World Series, women make Final Four in basketball. I'm going to say College World Series for baseball. Like a big part of me wanted to do playoff for football. I just don't think we're there yet, unfortunately, but that'd be cool. But yeah, I'll say College World Series for baseball.
I said, it's funny. We did this on the radio before New Year's, it was like the 29th, I guess. And Trevor, who I do the show with, he said the same thing. His bold prediction was College World Series in 2024. We had Dan McDonald on a couple of weeks ago and he got me really excited the way that he was talking, like the man not afraid to adjust. He was like, you know, he didn't say this, but he was like, we kind of screwed up as far as not embracing the transfer portal. You got to do it. And so this year we're changing things. Like he's not afraid to change when things don't go well, which I really respect about him. I think they're going to have a great bounce back here. My bold prediction, and it's not nearly as bold as that, was on this day, 12 months from now. So that was December 29th, 2024. I think that Louisville basketball will have a new head coach and will be more than two games over 500. We'll have a winning record. We'll have a solid record, maybe not top 25 good, but we'll have pretty clear evidence that we're going in the right direction. That's which I never thought it would be bold to predict a winning record for Louisville basketball in late December, but it kind of feels that way after these last few years. So hopefully that winds up happening.
If we kept Kenny for a third year, would we have to stop the podcast?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too. I don't even think I couldn't even, like, fake it anymore. I'd be like, let's talk about yesterday's Price is Right.
I mean, I'm not sure how we're going to do the next 2 months, like, honestly. Like,
I don't either.
I really don't. Like, I can't – we can't answer the same questions every single day for the next 9 weeks, and I'm not going to react to, like, hey, yep, they lost to North Carolina, and it was bad. They look bad again. Like, what do you want me to say? Like, I'm out of words to describe what's happening right now. I think I've said my piece many times over, and the only thing left now is what's next. All right, Dan, do you have a Dan in the Dumps to wrap us up today?
Yeah.
Besides being relegated in fantasy football.
Yeah, Christmas Eve, it was nice. We went to church. I went to my mother-in-law's. It was lovely. Had some soup. The kids, they really enjoyed themselves. Had a couple cocktails. Was feeling good. It's Christmas Eve. Everyone in the Christmas spirit. My wife, Christmas, and I'm sure Mary's like this too. They just have like an extra pep in their step. There's
uh-oh. We lost Dan. Dan's gone. All right, you know what? We will hear the rest of Dan's story next time. I'm not going to – I don't want to – there you are. Okay, we lost you there for a little bit.
Gotcha. So okay. Long story short, we get home. My wife's like, hey, go in the hallway. We're all lined up. I have no idea what we're even doing. Then she starts playing the Mariah Carey All I Want for Christmas song. And we're supposed to go out and like do a dance move in front of like a setup camera. I think this is only going to like, you know, my sister-in-law's family. Like, I think this is like a cute little video because, you know, they do stuff on their TikToks or whatever. I was not in agreement, nor did I have any idea that my wife not only put this on TikTok, but she like texted it out to the entire world. So I woke up with comments from you guys. No, it was on her Instagram too. Woke up with comments from you guys, comments from my Columbus friends. I heard comments like, I guess the podcast is over now. I heard your sleeves look like a lead singer for a 70s rock band.
That was me.
I showed up at Cam's soccer game. A lot of, I didn't know you were such a big Mariah Carey fan comments were being made. My wife is definitely, she's on the shit list a little bit. I didn't agree to that, nor will I ever do it again. But there is a video out there. I'm not trying to broadcast it. I'll probably take it down after this, but it was embarrassing.
I will put a link to the video in the show notes for this episode. We'll have it out there. It's a very awkward video. You can tell that you don't really want to do it. Your dance moves are half-assed, but I enjoyed it. I'm glad to see it. Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. It should be easy to find. Leave us a nice rating. Give us a nice review. And you'll be able to find out when the next podcast is on, is available. We'll be back next week. We'll recap, I'm sure, whatever's going on in the Louisville basketball world. Maybe we'll talk a little video games. Who knows? Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next week. Go Cards.
Go Cards.